The actress Emma Thompson once said, "The one thing you've got to be prepared to do as a parent is not be liked from time to time." Welcome to the Mama Festo, the podcast where parenting and politics combine. I'm Stella Creasy, I'm a backbench Labour MP and mum to two young children. My guest today is an occupational therapist and founder of the Smallest Things premature baby charity, Catriona Ogilvy. Catriona, having worked in the NHS and hospitals, including in neonatal intensive care, started the Smallest Things following the premature birth of both of her sons. She now works with children and young people in the community specialising in special educational needs. Catriona, welcome to the Mama Festo. Catriona, thank you so much for joining us today on the Mama Festo. Yours is an extraordinary, powerful personal story as to how you came to set up the Smallest Things as a campaign and a charity. Just talk us through how that happened.
Yeah, so it was the Smallest Things actually officially turns 10 this year. So it's really lovely to be chatting about the work of the charity and sort of how
it's a preteen charity. Is it starting?
It is very much preteen.
Not speak you very much.
It is. So I mean, rewind nearly 13 years ago, I was pregnant with my first son, Samuel. And rather ironically, I used to work in neonatal intensive care. So when the GP said to me, where did I want to be booked in to have my baby? I said King's College Hospital, because, you know, if anything goes wrong, I knew it was a good place to be, not really thinking that anything would go wrong. And then waking up on a Friday morning and a sunny August day, my waters broke really suddenly. And I still recall sitting in a back of a taxi on a towel on my way up Streatham High Road to the hospital, texting my boss saying, well, you know, I'm not sure I'll make it in today. And I think even then I didn't quite realise that I was actually properly in labour and would be having a baby at just 29 weeks. So sort of my start as becoming a mum was quite a traumatic experience, to say the least. And we had 2 months in neonatal intensive care. Wow. And came home and thought, you know, that really difficult time is over. And the thing that really struck me, though, in the couple of years after that was that actually our time in neonatal care wasn't over. There was many things that came after our, mm-hmm. Our long admission to hospital. And I realised that there wasn't much awareness of what goes on, not just behind the doors of the neonatal unit, but also what happens to you as a family after you leave hospital. So, for example, Samuel was readmitted to hospital, not just several times, but he would be readmitted to hospital several times over the course of a year. So it was really hard with work. My mental health suffered. Our family finances suffered. But nobody was really talking about that. And there was no information for parents. So I thought, well, I'll start a little blog, perhaps called The Smallest Things, to raise awareness. And within weeks, I was inundated with parents getting in touch saying, you know, it's 2 years ago for me, or 10 years, or in some cases over 20 years. And I didn't know that other people felt like this. I thought it was just me. And that was the point where we thought, you know what, actually, this needs to be something bigger. So the Smallest Things as a charity was established really to raise awareness and to campaign for much better support for families after they've been through that experience.
So just talk us through then the legislation that you were pushing for and what it will do.
So at the moment, and still, even though the legislation's gone through, it's not in effect yet. If you have a baby born prematurely or very poorly and they're admitted to neonatal intensive care, parental leave starts that day. So in my case, Samuel was born 11 weeks early. So we had, I had 2 months visiting Samuel in neonatal intensive care, and that was 2 months of my maternity leave used up. My husband went back to work after just 1 week, so he had 2 weeks paternity leave to take. So he decided to split it and to have 1 week to be with Samuel in hospital and then 1 week for when he came home from hospital. The new legislation now will give parents up to 12 weeks of additional statutory pay while their baby is in hospital. So it will make a huge difference. I still remember being told by a consultant that Samuel was likely to stay in hospital for 2 months. And I thought, okay, you know, well, we'll just have to do that. And then a nurse came and spoke to me and she said, oh, have you spoken to your HR department? Because your maternity leave has started. And I thought, well, that can't be right. I've just been told we're going to be in hospital for 2 months. How can 2 months visiting a really tiny, very fragile, poorly baby be 2 months of my maternity leave? So this legislation will make a real difference for families. The one thing the Smallest Things campaigns for, though, still is that employers don't have to wait for that legislation to come through. So we have, as the Smallest Things, our Employer with Heart Charter. Lots of organisations and employers have signed up to that and are going further than the 12-week statutory pay, paying full pay for the length of time that a baby is in hospital. So that's really important that employers don't have to wait for the legislation to come through and can and should go further.
And just talk us through how many children every year in this country end up in neonatal care.
So about 80,000 babies will end up in neonatal care. Some will be admitted just for a day or two. Those born prematurely are most likely to have a prolonged stay in neonatal care, and that's over 50,000 babies. It affects 1 in 10 families will have a baby admitted to neonatal intensive care. And it's that journey. So certainly the Smallest Things is all about that journey that carries on after you leave the neonatal unit. So it's thinking about how parents can be supported, particularly around parental mental health. We know that parents are much more likely to experience symptoms of PTSD after they come home from a neonatal intensive care stay. But at the moment, that there's no support for families. And until recently, quite little recognition of the impact on mental health for parents going through that journey. So there's some really simple things that can be done. So, for example, the GP 6 week well woman check. For a mum who has a baby in neonatal intensive care, she's likely to still be visiting her baby in hospital. So actually looking at a well-being check for families, perhaps 6 weeks after they've come home from neonatal intensive care, would be better for those families. But then making sure that there are the services to support those families when they do need more help with at home.
And so what happened when you, I mean, obviously you were working in neonatal care, and this happened to you. What happened when you went to your employer and said, look, my son is still in care, you know, my maternity leave has started, surely this can't be right?
Yeah. So at the time I wasn't still working in neonatal care, but I was working on a children's ward or children's hospital, and I spoke to my employer, and that was it. To the point that I didn't really even question it, because that was just how things were. The difficulty was returning to work, because Samuel still had health needs and we were very worried about him being in a childcare setting. But also he was bouncing in and out of hospital. It was about once every 6 weeks he would be admitted to hospital. And I remember sort of him perhaps falling ill with a cough or a cold, perhaps on a Wednesday. And I would think to myself, just get through to the weekend. If we can be admitted to hospital at the weekend, that will be okay. And looking back on it now, that's just bonkers that is how we were living our lives. But taking time off work to be with Samuel in hospital was a really difficult thing to do. It shouldn't have been a difficult thing to do. But I spoke to my HR department and asked about carer's leave or taking time off unpaid when he did have hospital admissions. And I was told that that wasn't possible. Now, years later, I know that actually that should have been possible. But when you're in the throes of looking after a really essentially sick infant, you don't have the bandwidth for those battles to be battling with the HR department about what type of leave I should have had access to. Fast forward for when Samuel started school, though, I set up my own business still as an occupational therapist, but decided to become self-employed just to have that bit more flexibility and freedom, because I couldn't juggle. Then it was two children after neonatal care who were both quite poorly, and holding down a part-time paid job. It just wasn't possible.
I think that's one of the challenges is that so often mums end up having to make choices they don't necessarily want to have to make, because the world of work prides itself on this idea, well, we've given you maternity leave, what are you complaining about? And you know, it's up to you to make it work. And yet the story that you're telling and the impact, especially on having a child who does need that extra support at that point in their lives, is so powerful. The fact that it's taken until now, as you say, the legislation still hasn't actually been implemented. When you say that you've had people come to you from across the country because you started a blog, I mean, those of us who tried to blog about things and got one follower, I think it's great to see. Obviously, it showed that there was such a need to address this issue. What sort of reaction have you had about the legislation from people?
Huge. I think the difficulty, though, Stella, is the legislation has gone through, but people can't access it. It won't come into effect until April 2025, nearly 2 years after the legislation passed. And I think it's almost worse now for families, because there is recognition that they should have that extra support while their baby or babies are in hospital, but not yet. It's we know you should have this, but we're not ready to give it to you yet. So back sort of 13 years ago when it happened to me, that was just the way it was. So I think it's much more difficult at the moment. The really nice thing, though, is parents who have been through that experience are the ones driving this. They're the ones going to their employers now saying, you know, it won't benefit me, but this is my experience and I don't want it to happen to anybody else. And employers that are generally very good at listening to those and actually making changes to their parental leave policies. The charity itself is very much driven by parents who've had experience of neonatal care and premature childbirth. And I think that's something that we really feel very strongly is important to us as a charity, that it's parents talking about their experiences very loudly and getting the message out there. Firstly, to say to other parents, you're not alone. This is, unfortunately, your normal experience of neonatal care. There isn't anything wrong with you. It's normal to have these feelings. But also to shout very loudly about it, because people haven't been talking about it, to make those changes that are needed for families.
And I think that's a really interesting example, because obviously it's taken far too long, frankly, for politics to understand and recognise the experience that you're talking about. Just talk us through what it's been like to campaign and what it was like to try and raise these issues within political parties. I know obviously this was something that originally was in a manifesto in 2019. And as you say, it won't actually come into play until 2025. That's 6, maybe 7 years of waiting. What's that been like?
It is 6, 7 years more of campaigning. In all honesty, it wasn't something that had been spoken about. So when we first started raising this, the reaction we got from politicians particularly, and it was Margot James, I think, was the minister responsible for employment at the time. We met with her and she was actually quite taken aback. You know, I did take my young children along with me, which I think sort of helped with that. But
I remember case studies.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember clearly her sort of saying, you know, obviously as politicians, you get lots of campaigners and sort of requests to change things and things like that. But she said, you know, this is something that hadn't come across her desk before and was something that really made her sit up and think. And I think it was really powerful to have particularly women saying, we've actually had to drop out of the workforce. You know, a study that The Smallest Things did was 1 in 10 mums who'd had a premature baby had just not been able to return to work. Just the huge impact that it was having on families. We had to jump through a lot of hoops, though. So the first step was new ACAS guidance came out around how employers should support families. I think the real change, though, was actually us going out to employers and asking employers to make that change, because we could then go back to policymakers and say, look, you know, actually employers are doing this anyway, and good employers will offer the support for parents, but we need all employers to be doing this. We were really pleased. It was in actually the Conservative manifesto in 2019. And as you say, there was then a lot of dragging of feet. Originally, it was going to be wrapped up in the employment bill, which we know sort of fell and disappeared. But it was something that I have to say that the government always sort of had a commitment to do and did always say, if there can be another mechanism, we can and bring that through. And we were very thankful that Stuart MacDonald was able to take that through for
us. How did you feel when the bill dropped?
I'd like to say angry, but actually it was more not surprised. I think we were sort of feeling like that was the way it was going to go. And I think in all honesty, as a group of parents campaigning for this, we had just been so pleased that it got that high up the agenda. I remember it was Theresa May. I think it was one of the last things she did as Prime Minister, say that she was going to make sure that she brought this through. And, you know, as a group of parents who've been campaigning for it for years, that was like a brilliant moment. So I think we always knew it would happen. I don't think there was any doubt that this legislation wouldn't go through somehow, but it was just finding the right mechanism to get it through, while at the same time knowing that employers were still making changes themselves.
But it's been so hard to convince people that Parliament and politics has done anything good at all in the last 7 or 8 years. All people have seen is people fighting on television and cycles of prime ministers and chancellors. So actually, this is a really good example that behind the scenes, there was something good happening in politics and that you can do things that are positive. I think it's really interesting to hear your experience as somebody campaigning from such a personal perspective of what it was like to try and navigate that system. And for people listening or watching this, you know, if there's something they feel really strongly about, they think would make a difference to their families or to their kids or to their experiences of other people going through something, what advice you'd give them?
It's all about telling your story, isn't it? I mean, that's sort of the crux of what we were able to do. And I talk very much about neonatal intensive care being a hidden world. Unless you've had a reason to be on that unit, and that reason is either you work on that unit or you've had a baby on the unit, you really don't know what it's like behind those doors. And I think sort of 10 years ago or so, people would come home and it wasn't discussed what it's like to have a baby hooked up to a life support machine in an incubator, changing a nappy for the first time, and terrified that you're going to dislodge their breathing tube. Having to go home and leaving your baby in the care of essentially strangers every day. It was us telling those stories loud and clear that allowed us to campaign. And I think that's the important thing is to tell your story and tell your experience and to come up with the solutions. And in this case, the solution was quite simple. Parents to be able to be with their child, to offer the support that their child needs when they're in neonatal intensive care, need more time to do that. And that was a really simple solution and a simple message for politicians for us to bang on about loudly for a long time.
Did you ever experience any opposition to what you were talking about?
Actually, very little opposition. I think the only questions that did come up was, you know, how could employers afford this? And the very simple answer is, you know, they can't afford not to. Particularly for dads and partners, the idea that they are sitting at work whilst they've got a tiny baby in neonatal intensive care, that they can be productive, it's just farcical, really. So it was more a case of actually employers should do this, particularly to help with recruitment and retention and to support their staff. And as I've mentioned, we know that employers are already starting to offer this for staff anyway. So that wasn't really an argument for us.
And obviously this podcast is called The Mumifesto. We apologise for the pun, but it is about, we're now coming up to a general election. What would you like to see on the agenda, as you say, although the legislation isn't due to come in for another year and a half. But when it does come in, obviously, that hopefully will give people a lot more clarity, a lot more support. And as you say, employers could do now what you're asking. But what's sort of next for the smaller things? What would you like to see in continuing this work to understand and support people who have to go through this experience?
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's always more to be done. And for us, there's a couple of different threads on this. One is more support for parents after they leave the neonatal unit. So particularly thinking around mental health support, but also support from their health visitors as well. We know some health visiting services have been cut by a third over recent years, and families really struggle to access the services and support that they need. And the other thing is looking at the educational needs of children born preterm. 2 to 3 children in every classroom are likely to have been born prematurely, and we know they're much more at risk, not necessarily having, but at a much higher risk of having special educational needs. And those needs are often overlooked because they're quite subtle needs. So again, it's looking at simple solutions. A simple solution would be for all schools to actually ask on their registration forms about preterm birth history, so that a class teacher will know straight away at the beginning of every year which children in their class may have been born prematurely and are more likely to have those learning needs. But there's a wider conversation, and I think generally around children and manifestos going forward. I know I used to be a big advocate of there being a children's manifesto, and actually I don't believe in that anymore. I think children should be front and centre of all parties' manifestos, particularly at the moment, the sort of the current climate that we're in, where we see waiting lists for children are quite frankly ridiculous. Families are in crisis while they're sat waiting on waiting lists, waiting for the support that they need. The number of children out of school at the moment, all these things need to be sort of front and centre, and children born prematurely.
When you say a children's manifesto, you don't mean using really simple words and bright colours that even some of those people who are standing for Parliament might understand what they're claiming to stand for. You mean actually centering children and the experience of children in our political life.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's listening to children as well. So the Children's Commissioner had a piece of work recently, and the big thing for me that came out of that was children and young people saying they just didn't feel like they were listened to. You know, there's lots of discussion at the moment about sort of online safety and children having mobile phones, but it's the grown-ups talking about that. And, you know, I feel very strongly that actually it's our young people that should be part of those discussions and shaping sort of what they would like government to do for them.
Did you think when you started the smallest things, you say you started off just as a blog really to help and support other parents going through, did you think it would get to this stage of having this kind of impact and giving you this kind of platform?
Never. It was, it was a blog. It was me writing about my own experiences, sort of often in the middle of the night when I was up with poorly children. What I very much wanted to do was raise awareness of that journey and to make change. I don't think I ever considered the impact and the amount of change that could come from that. And as a charity, we're now at that point of actually that sort of real crunch point of moving on to the next step and really changing things for families that have been through neonatal intensive care and very much improving outcomes for children who have been born preterm. We know that outcomes are generally poorer than their peers born at full term, and it shouldn't be that way. And we know you're also much more likely to have a preterm birth if you're a family from a disadvantaged background as well. And that absolutely needs to change.
Do you ever get time out?
I do. Absolutely. So I do. I mean, I juggle the smallest things and my work as a children's occupational therapist, which, you know, is a whole other conversation that is getting more challenging with the families that I'm supporting. You know, with no sort of special educational needs, is in crisis at the moment. So that is my other job. But my time out is my garden. I absolutely love my garden. My children affectionately, perhaps not so affectionately, called me the toad lady. We have a pond and I love my toads at this time of year come. And then we have spawn and tadpoles throughout the summer. So I get out into the garden for a bit of self-care.
I think that's so important for people to hear, that it is still possible to do incredible things as you have done through the smallest things, and really change the debate. As you say, nobody was talking about this until you started campaigning on it, but also still be able to be the toad lady.
Definitely the toad lady. And it's not only possible, it's really important. Because if you don't have that time out, then you just, I don't think, well, certainly I wouldn't have the stamina to do the things that I'm doing.
What would be your message to somebody right now who maybe is facing a diagnosis as you did all those years ago?
I would say talk about your experiences. Let your friends and family know what you've been through. I think there is an assumption from friends and family that once you've left the unit that everything's okay. But actually, once you've left the unit, that is when you're able to start processing things. Lots of families talk about the anniversaries, so the first birthday. But there's also sort of the due date, and those other significant dates that can trigger trauma. And it's to start having those conversations, and it's to seek the support that you might need. And it's to say that these feelings are really normal. It would be not normal to come out of an experience of delivering your baby suddenly and traumatically, to have your baby taken away and admitted to intensive care. And for lots of mums, they don't see their baby for the first, you know, hours, if not days, because they themselves are really sick. And then to try and care for a baby in neonatal intensive care, it would not be normal to have those experiences and not be impacted by it. So it's to share your feelings. There is support out there, and to visit your GP. And lots of parents say to us, unfortunately, I think our most recent research said that less than a quarter of the parents felt like their GP really understood the journey that they've been through, or their feelings, and what they were experiencing. But it's to have those conversations with your health visitors and GP.
Well, I just want to say thank you on behalf of the policymakers who you've made sit up and take notice, and thank you for all the work that you have done. It is an extraordinary story to turn something which must have been just so completely traumatic, so overwhelming, into being such a powerful voice for change, and to see the impact that it's had. But if it's okay, you can keep the toads. I'm not a great fan of the toads. You can keep them. Thank you so much, Kecho, for being part of the Mamafesto today. And we'll make sure that people can find a link to the smallest things if they want to find out more information in my social media and also with this podcast. But thank you. I hope you've enjoyed listening to today's Mamafesto and Catriona's incredibly powerful story about how her own personal experience has ended up generating a piece of legislation that's probably going to change the lives of thousands of parents at a critical point in the years ahead. If you're a parent with a child in neonatal care right now and you want to find out more about the smallest things, please do look at my social media for the link to them. I won't be sharing any details about how to raise toads, though. Hope you've enjoyed listening to the Mamafesto. Please do listen to the next episode.